Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Marty Goldenson in for Brian Lehrer. And our 10 questions that count census project continues. Last week we went through the questions on the census form. Today, the political stakes. Every 10 years, political districts are redrawn to reflect the changing population. And while redistricting is meant to be the basis for establishing a representative democracy, it inevitably becomes about political wrangling and attempts to gerrymander safe districts for incumbents. For sure, district boundaries and the number of representatives will change all over New York in time for the 2012 elections. To explain how this works and why it matters, Andrew Beveridge. He is a professor of sociology at Queens College and the CUNY Graduate Center. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Marty. Welcome. I'm very glad to be here.
Yeah, I don't know if you were able to listen to the show while you were waiting, but we were sort of nestling up to this topic in the previous segment.
Yeah, I heard just the last bit about the state Senate, and yes, I think that is ground zero for redistricting this upcoming round.
Good. So before we get into the politics, let me just understand the basics here. First, why remake the boundaries of congressional, state Senate, and assembly districts every 10 years? What's that about?
Well, basically, there's a thing that's usually wrongly said as one man, one vote. But what it basically is it's equality of representation based on the total population of any district. And so, you know, women and children, people who are citizens or non-citizens are all counted in the total population. And so as the total population shifts among states, there's reapportionment, and each state gets assigned a certain number of congressional districts based upon total population. And then within each state, the legislative districts are redrawn based upon total population of districts, you know, the number one criteria being relative population equality. For Congress, it's actually absolute population equality, like with as good as you can get, which is often within one or two.
Just to make it clear, there are three different sets of districts here that New York is divided up into its assembly districts, right, into its state Senate districts, and then congressional districts for the national, right? And
correct.
They're all different, right?
Exactly. They're all different.
And you were just saying, and city council, right, four, actually.
Well, city council, yeah, for New York City, there's city council. For
right.
The surrounding areas, like often there's state, there's a county legislator, city councils for the surrounding cities, et cetera.
Now, you were saying, though, for Congress, it's absolute?
Absolute population equality. So every single congressional district has to have exactly the same number of people in it.
Right, so, but it's only rough equality in the state districts, right?
Right. It's generally the standard has generally been 10% total deviation from the ideal, what would be the average size from the highest to the lowest district.
Which is to say, see if I get this right, that if you have 300,000, you're supposed to have 300,000 people in a district. You might be able to gerrymander up or down 10% and get away with it legally?
Yes.
Right.
And well, no, 5%. 5% up or 5% down, total 10%.
Total 10%. So with that tiny adjustment, you do get an enormous political advantage if you're the party who gets to do the redistricting, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, that's exactly what happened last time. And, in fact, one of the reasons that we're in this potential deadlock or we had the gridlock at the state Senate is that the states, the Republicans decided at the 11th hour and 59th minute of the redistricting cycle last time to increase the size of the state Senate from 61 to 62. So you could have the potential of an absolute, you know, gridlock logjam with an even seat. And the reason they did that is because the population shifts from upstate to downstate. The relative population shifts from upstate to downstate cost about 1.7 Senate seats. And so what they did was they added a Senate seat downstate, and then by very careful population adjustment, in effect moved about two-thirds of a seat upstate by making every district upstate smaller than it should be and every district downstate larger than the average.
We just got an email, too. It is this from a listener. What do you think the guiding principle should be in drawing new districts? Should districts be diverse or homogeneous? What would you change if you were redrawing the district?
Well, I think the first thing I would change is I would try for something much closer to population equality, because since Congress can be 100, absolutely equal, there's no real reason that they couldn't have a much closer to population equality for the Senate and Assembly districts. Because actually, just by the way, I mean, the Senate, the Assembly, which no one ever talks about, is about, two-thirds Democrat, and it's, in effect, redistricted as a mirror image of the Senate with respect to population, which is to say every district downstate is smaller than it should be, and every district upstate is larger than it should be in terms of population.
Let me break in for a second here. Those same questions, what do you think the guiding principle should be, and should districts be diverse or homogeneous? There's interesting questions that we wondered what our listeners think about this. Give us a call at 212-433-9692, more slowly, 212-433-9692. WNYC, or you can post a comment at WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer's show. If you have an opinion about this, do you think that your district should, in fact, be homogeneous? Because, you might have your own arguments for that. I can think of many. But in the meantime, let me ask you, what's the role of the Voting Rights Act in all of this?
Well, there's two roles to the Voting Rights Act, and there's two different sections that apply. One is called the Section 5, which actually New York is required to obey because of found violations of voting rights years ago in the 70s and 80s. And so several downstate counties, including I think all but one of the counties in New York City, are covered. And so any statewide plan has to be pre-cleared by the Justice Department. And what that means is they have to look at the plan to see that minority rights are upheld, which is basically, I just came back from redistricting, which is basically the idea is that you're not supposed to dilute black voting, black or Hispanic voting power. And the way that's done, there's two traditional ways that you could do it. You can either pack minorities into just a few seats, which is one of the things that the Bush Justice Department was specialized in. So that cuts down the number of total seats that they would have. And the other way you could do it is you could crack minorities and put them across, put small chunks of them in a variety of districts, which is actually what's going on in Long Island with respect to the state Senate. And if you do that, then they don't have, they don't have enough, they can't, develop an effective majority to get a preferred candidate in any district. So those are the two ways that you could dilute minority votes, and both of those are actually illegal under the Voting Rights Act, and any districting plan for Congress, Senate, or Assembly, or the City Council of New York will have to go down to the Justice Department for preclearance.
Robert in Marine Park, one of our listeners, has a question. Go ahead, Robert.
Oh, thank you. Marine Park, the Senate districts were changed, I guess, I don't know if it was by Governor Pataki or when the Republicans were in control of the state Senate. Marine Park, a conservative area, was changed, and now it includes Bay Ridge, another conservative area. So we ended up with a Republican, Marty Golden, and the Democrats, the last couple of elections, did not even run a candidate against him. Can this be reversed? And do you think this is an ethical thing to do, to combine two neighborhoods which are not even near each other?
Well, I mean, the trouble with it is it's all trade-offs, and the reality is that the last redistricting was done by it's basically not done by the governor. I mean, the governor has to sign it, but it's done the way it's been done traditionally in New York is that the Assembly and the Senate and the governor have to agree on the congressional districts and then pass them as a bill. If they fail to do that, it goes to court. And then what's been done in the past is it's sort of like a, I don't know if you could call it a suicide pact or a non-aggression pact, but the Assembly does the Assembly, the Senate does the Senate, and they don't look at one another's districts. So then they come back and they pass in one giant bill, both the Senate and the Assembly, and then it's signed by the governor. So my suspicion is that in this round, if the Democrats hold power in the state Senate, and that's still ground zero, if they keep power in the state Senate, I mean, right now it's 32-30, my estimate is it would go to 38-24. That is 38 Democrats, 24 Republicans. And so this lock on the state Senate, which is actually started in 1939, and then there was a brief hiatus when Goldwater lost, and then it went back into Republican control, would be broken. And I think, as the last person said, the last guest said, I think that would be broken for quite a long time, because basically the current state Senate is preserved by very complicated gerrymandering that has been going on really since at least 1970.
Well, speaking of complicated gerrymandering, and thanks for calling, by the way, why do we let this process become so political? We noticed that the former state senator, Seymour Lachman, wrote an op-ed in the Times published yesterday calling for a more independent panel made up of distinguished citizens and a few legislators to come up with three different district maps, and the legislature could vote for one of these three without making changes. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think that it should partially be taken out of, I think it should be taken to some extent out of political hands, because the trouble with it right now is that each and every legislator gets his look at the plan. And each and every legislator has to sign on, in the majority, has to sign on to the plan to let it go through. So all sorts of crazy stuff goes on. I mean, there's lots of times when people are drawn out of the district, like Hakeem Jeffries was drawn out of a district because they didn't want him as a potential opponent. And so this sort of thing goes on all the time. There's all sorts of political gerrymandering that goes on. Some of it doesn't distort the shape that much. It's often done around the edges. But it basically sort of makes the system somewhat tainted. However, the trouble in New York State is that it's very difficult. I mean, most people think to make really major changes in redistricting would require a state constitutional amendment, which is a very arduous process in New York. And I personally think that it should be moved to a commission, possibly like with an up or down vote like they have in Iowa. In other words, they come up with a plan, they get an up or down vote on the plan, but they don't sit in the room and that's where the lines are actually drawn. They can't even come in the door.
Speaking of who does this, I think we have a call from Lee in Scarsdale. Wanted to understand this better. Lee?
Hi there. There's a proposal been floating around to draw the districts as squares. In other words, every a 90-degree angle on every side, and that the squares would be adjusted so that population came out for every district. And this would eliminate all this craziness and gerrymandering. Everyone gets a square, and your square depends upon the population's size in that area, the density.
Andrew Beveridge, how naive is that?
Well, it's very naive, because first off, if you look at New York State boundaries, they're not square. Secondly, it would basically go through every single political boundary in New York State. Every single city would be split. Many areas would be split. Every county. And then the second thing it would do is it would massively dilute the vote of a lot of the minority districts, which actually are sometimes a little strangely shaped, so you could keep an effective majority of the minority population in one district. So I think that's very naive. I think a better approach, though, would be to, because you always will have a trade-off. You don't want to cut up political boundaries if you can avoid it. You don't want to, cut up neighborhoods if you can avoid it. You want to keep minorities together. You want to have population equality. You want to have the districts be reasonably compact. All of these things are competing objectives. And so I think that the best approach would be to have a group that doesn't have their own interests tied to it. I mean, that doesn't, care where.
Yeah, but of course, the legislature, which has the interest, would have to give up that power to people who have no interest.
Right.
So it's not likely, is it?
No. And the only way to do it, formally in New York would be with a constitutional amendment. And, I mean, the other thing that I should mention is that the prison population, which is largely upstate, is used to basically plump up the upstate district.
Yeah, I love this, that they're fighting over where you got 5,000 people in a prison upstate. The Republicans or Democrats are fighting over where you get to count these people, in their prison or where they came from, which is usually the city, right?
But in the state constitution, residency is defined for prisoners as where they came from. And in fact, it's not supposed to cut down their ability to be counted politically from where they came. And they don't really intend to stay in the prison. And obviously, many of them are disenfranchised. They're disenfranchised from voting. So basically, you have this huge numbers of people who are just used to increase the size of districts upstate, but are really not constituents of those people. And so it's like a very pernicious system, and I think it should be basically, that should definitely be done. And I know there's a bill, and I'm hoping that it'll pass, where they will then reassign the prisoners to where they were picked up.
Yeah, that could change a little bit when the U.S. Census comes out, right?
Well, no, the census is only going to say where they are, you know, be able to tell where the prisons are, but there's a bill by Schneiderman to actually count the prisoners from where they were picked up using Department of Correction data, information. And I think that that bill, I talked to someone, they think it would take about 2 months to get through the process. I think if that bill passed, it would make it possible for, just this would only affect the Assembly and the Senate, because Congress's redistricting is mandated really by the feds. But for the Senate and the Assembly, it would mean that the prison population would be counted based upon where the prisoners were when they picked up. There's a number of court cases that go that way as well. There's one that was just came down in the First Circuit. There's been several in the Second Circuit that actually show that that basically find that prisoners are not a resident of the prison.
The lesson in all this, it seems to me, is that you want to send back your census form because it can matter as much as voting, right?
Oh, yeah. No, the census form in a certain ways may matter more than voting because it will say how much your vote is worth. And so, you know, like if you send your form back and everybody else in the neighborhood sends their form back, and even if you're, you know, the children, everybody will be counted. And so it says how much anybody who votes in your district, how much that vote will be worth. So it's
We've got to go. Andrew Beveridge is professor of sociology at Queens College and at the CUNY Grad Center. Well, this is Marty Goldenson sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We'll be back shortly.